News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. So I was talking about this yesterday, and I want to do a deep dive into this because people ask me all the time about ESG and DEI and that sort of stuff. So I interviewed Paul Tice. We had a conversation about ESG. It's pretty scary. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not about making you money. It's not about fiduciary responsibilities. It's none of that. It's all about virtue signaling. And this guy has put out a great book. His book that he has out is The Race to Zero. The Race to Zero. And he is Paul Tice. He is a really smart guy. He worked on Wall Street for a long time. And I started off the conversation with him asking him, what exactly is ESG? Cut one.
So it goes by a number of different names: ESG investing, sustainable investing, responsible investing. But it's basically the theory that you should use ESG factors, environmental, social, governance factors, to drive your company policy and your investment portfolio decisions, as opposed to using objective financial metrics like we've used up until now. So ESG is non-financial, it's morally subjective, and it's based on the theory of stakeholder capitalism, which says that you should run your companies for the good of not the owners and the capital providers and the employees, but for the good of society. And it's basically the government working through third-party activists led by the UN to direct the private sector and the financial markets. And that is basically the definition of fascism, not capitalism. Yeah, I mean, ESG, I think, is just every progressive goal of the last 100 years kind of wrapped all together, hiding behind climate change as the main priority. But it's basically taking progressive politics, calling it finance, and then trying to impose it on the business sector and the financial industry. So, you know, we need to acknowledge that up front and not be afraid to have a political discussion, because it's all about politics. There's a reason why Democrats support this agenda uniformly and Republicans don't, although I would argue Republicans need to be more uniform about that.
So, I mean, that's the big challenge. So it's not about providing great investment returns and things like that. It's about virtue signaling and saying to people, you know, around the world, this is the way it's going to be. This is the way it's going to happen. I asked Paul about how it is that we got here, because it's a very important journey that we have to understand about. And he gave me a fairly lengthy explanation, and so I want to kind of take a moment and think about all of the stuff that can be factored into your economic life that you have no control over. You cannot say yes, you cannot say no, there's no consent, there's none of that sort of stuff that is happening. And so what you end up with is these bureaucrats concocting all of these things. But it's even worse, because when you're talking to a guy like Paul Tice, who's seen all of these companies, BlackRock, these huge investment firms, what have you, what he understands is this is collusion. These are all the finance operations that are out there on Wall Street, that are out there with the banks, and they are all colluding in unison to decide whether or not you're going to have the right to invest the way you want to invest. That's number one. Number two, it's being absolutely driven by the United Nations, which is essentially an unaccountable body that we are, you know, leaders in, and, you know, to a certain extent. But the fact is, this is not about cleaning the environment, doing any of this sort of stuff. It's about proving that you're willing to make the sacrifices. It's not a fiduciary thing. It's none of the things that you have become accustomed to expecting if you go in and try to use an investment vehicle to generate returns for you down the road, right? This is about, this thing might stink, but we all have to be a part of the stink, because that's going to prove that we really care about the world around us. We've got plenty more on this straight ahead. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. All right, so we're continuing this tour of ESG. By the way, we are going to post, we'll post this up over at the WBT website if you want to, share it with people. Please credit us if you can. It'd be lovely. You know, we do a lot of the work here. It's a lot of fun. So, what is ESG? You found out what ESG is. It's just this way of funding progressive approaches on different things like that. This is continuing my conversation with Paul Theiss. The Race to Zero is his book. And so I asked him, I said, Paul, how did we get here with this ESG? How did this suddenly morph? Cut number two.
There is no empirical proof that ESG or sustainable investing is going to lead to better financial performance, either for your company or for your portfolio. And it's through no lack of trying because, you know, universities have churned out an amazing amount of research to try and make that case, and it's failed, right? There are problems with what you're measuring with ESG. ESG could basically capture every aspect of a company's fundamental profile. So you're typically capturing everything, which means you're capturing nothing. So there's no proof that it's a positive catalyst for financial performance. And that's why the ESG activists are kind of tweaking their argument, saying, well, it's good risk management if you follow ESG. And, you know, they're also kind of moving it towards we need to focus on impact as opposed to financial returns. So, you know, people are not doing this because they think BlackRock and Larry Fink have discovered a new way to make money investing. People are doing this because they're under duress. They may believe in it, like BlackRock, which has been the leading voice of it, but there are many more companies out there and CEOs who are just afraid to speak out, and so they're just going along because it's a very totalitarian program. When you look at ESG, you need to acknowledge that it's been coming on for the last four decades at least. You can trace it back to the 80s, and frankly, you can trace it back 200 years to, you know, every other attack on capitalism and fossil fuels. But at least in the modern time, you know, back in the 80s is when the United Nations kind of tweaked their mission statement and they started focusing on environmental and social issues. So climate change came together, sustainable development, and ESG investing basically needs to be looked at the third leg of the stool for the United Nations. And it's not surprising that the leading voice pushing ESG on Wall Street is the United Nations. They have an investor group that they formed back in 06 called the Principles for Responsible Investment. Every Wall Street firm is a member of that club. And with that club membership comes requirements, which includes integrating ESG into all of the assets that you manage. So, and you can't leave that club. Over the last decade, I would say, since the crisis in 08, a lot of Wall Street firms have signed on for ESG because it signals their virtue, right? And we had an image problem for the industry coming out of the crisis. But now that they've been suckered into the trade, they can't really find the exit door because how do you leave a virtue signaling organization? Do you admit that you were fooled? In which case, you've got a competency problem. And now regulation is coming to force everyone to continue doing it. And that's the real risk in this next phase.
This is so crazy. This is like so crazy. Why would you want to invest in this sort of stuff? But this is what's ending up happening. And so is it about the woke? And by the way, I ask him, why not just go to nuclear power? Why do you have to go to all this weird electrification and all this sort of stuff? Wouldn't nuclear power be better for every part of the world? Why can't we do that? Here's what he said, cut three.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I wrote the book, besides giving an insider's view from Wall Street of why ESG is bad, is to kind of refocus the argument of the opposition. In the last 2 years, we've obviously gotten more pushback publicly against ESG, but I think a lot of that pushback has been more focused on, you know, more woke issues. I hate that phrase, but, you know, it's, diversity and equity, inclusion, and some of the other more culture war type of issues, not to diminish them with that phrase, but I think a lot of people may be thinking that this is just the latest skirmish in a culture war and it's going to blow over. It's not. And we need to focus on the climate change agenda embedded in ESG and what's going on in the financial markets, because the stated goal is to decarbonize and get to net zero. And that means not just investing in clean energy, you have to disinvest from oil and gas. So we're going to starve oil and gas companies for capital so that they can't grow. And under that scenario, transitioning away from fossil fuels to something that can't complete the transition, it's going to be very negative for the economy and every American, because prices will go up. Energy basically drives the cost of everything. So the inflation we've seen over the last 2 years under Biden is child's play, I think, for what we're in store for down the road. If the other side is successful in cutting back on supply and capital to the oil and gas industry. And it's also going to restrict everyone's economic freedoms, because, you know, fossil fuels has driven capitalism for 200 years. It has driven economic freedom. It's driven democracy. So there's a reason why the other side is so focused on fossil fuels and shutting it down. But, you know, your ability, whatever car you buy, right, electric vehicle, obviously, it has much less range. It has a number of issues around it, away from price. We're making our cities inhospitable to vehicles. This 15-minute city is a real thing. It's being implemented over in Europe and in a lot of blue state cities in this country already. So it will restrict your economic freedom. It will make the country poorer, and I think that's by design. But the other side, it's either one thing or another. With nuclear power, in theory, it's zero emissions. So we should replace, if you don't like coal, right, from an emissions perspective, then we should be ramping up and restarting the nuclear power and industry. We're not doing that, right, because there's a safety issue around nuclear power, even though, France is reliant on it. So it's one thing or another. We hydroelectric power. Is also zero emissions, but again, it's got other issues in terms of, the large footprint for it. So that doesn't work either. It's only intermittent renewables that apparently fit in the ESG system. And then at the same time, we have to shut down our existing baseload coal as well as natural gas. And we know that's going to lead to unstable electricity grids going forward. And we've seen that, what happens when that happens in Texas 3 years ago. So there's not a lot of logic to the other side. And that's why I think using reason on the other side, given all the political capital that's been invested in the climate change movement and ESG over the last 40 years, I don't think that will get us very far. We need to be more aggressive attacking the regulations that have been implemented, through non-democratic means, and dismantle them.
So coming up, you're going to hear who is exempted from this, and it's going to surprise you. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. All right, wrapping this up on the conversation involving ESG, because this I'm giving you more information about ESG than you probably have gotten from the media. I'm willing to say that with confidence. So, I asked Paul Tice, author of the book The Race to Zero, about ESG, and I asked him a final question, which was, what does this look like for, say, the developing world? How does this look? Cut number four.
It's a two-tiered system, and it's always been designed that way. So that's a design feature, that it's true for climate change and reducing emissions, sustainable development, and then ESG investing. It's targeted disproportionately at the developed world. So we have to get our emissions down here. All of our companies need to be sustainable. But the third world gets a pass. And, the third world includes China and India, which, we can debate about whether they're developing or somewhere in between. But they, I'll give you one statistic. Again, climate is the core of ESG. But for every 1 gigawatt of coal-fired power generation that we've shut down in North America and Europe since they passed the Paris Agreement in 2015, 2 gigawatts of new coal capacity has been added in the third world, mainly in China and India. So if this really is a global problem, you know, and a climate emergency, okay, we're clearly not making progress. But again, it's a wealth transfer. It's designed to deindustrialize the West and then allow the third world theoretically to catch up. But, you know, there'll be unintended consequences and feedback problems, because if you kill consumption in the developed world, eventually it's going to flow back into the developing world.
So somebody tell me, somebody answer this question for me. How do you elevate underdeveloped countries by kneecapping the developed countries? See, this is the fundamental disagreement in all of politics. Like, this is the fundamental question and the issue that determines where you stand on policy. Because if you're a progressive, and you can be whatever you want, like, I'm not here to save you from your socialist Marxist tendencies. You know, if that's what you believe, well, then, you know, that's great. That's great that you believe that. That's fine. And I'm hoping at some point you'll wake up and say, well, that's really not a great way to live. So how do you elevate somebody in poverty by making a wealthy person lose their money? See, you are either oriented with a zero-sum game, meaning there's only a winner and only a loser, or you believe that markets can grow over time. There's no reason to think that we couldn't fix climate change with innovation, with inventions, with things that can be created, right? There's no reason to think that, like, we can't deal with climate change by evolving out of it, okay? Something like that. But what they're doing is they're doing regulating. So you're a 62-year-old woman with an investment portfolio, and you've saved and done the right things. You've done everything you're supposed to do in your life. And so you're going to have these sharks on Wall Street who are then going to take your fund and stick it in an underperforming something that's wedded to regulation. Why? Why? There's a reason. There is a reason for all of this. And look, my friend Don says, it sounds like the system failed. No, this is the system working exactly to the millimeter, because government's number one aim is to prevent you from becoming independent. And I know that's a hard thing to believe. Government does not want you independent. Government wants you dependent, because if all of us suddenly decided that we were going to have agency over ourselves and we didn't need government, you would end up with a whole lot of bureaucrats standing on street corners begging for nickels. Your number one mission in life is to voluntarily help the poor and the indigent, and to provide for your family in the best possible way you can, absent the government menace.